Hi, this is Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Jalpit.
And this is Core Intuition. Always go for the cheap one.
Well, folks, as you may have noticed, we didn't end up having a show last week. Manton and I both got home from Singleton. We were excited, gearing up to record the week's episode, and just a series of sort of hiccups ended up having us put off the show. Manton actually came down with a little sickness. I hope you're feeling better this week, Manton.
Yep, a little better. Mostly better, actually.
A little bit better. Well, I hope you're feeling a lot better after seeing the announcement. We're recording this moments after Apple's special event and their announcement of really many, many things. I mean, Mavericks is out today, new MacBook Pros, the Mac Pro got a price, and other stuff like all new iWork and new iPads. So what did anything in particular jump out at you as like a surprise or particularly satisfying or dissatisfying?
Maybe the only surprise was the prices. So free, really. It's like the theme of the event seemed to be like, everything's free, right? Mavericks is free for everybody. It doesn't matter if you bought Mac OS 10 years ago. It's free. iLife, iWork, free for new, you know, new Macs, new users. I mean, I thought that was the only thing that was sort of, that's interesting. That's kind of, that changes things a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think it's great for certainly Mac users. And I think it's great for developers too, for Mavericks being free specifically, because everyone's going to have that thing and it's going to be nice to be able to use the APIs in it.
Yeah. It's a sticky subject because sometimes we developers are sort of pissed off when Apple makes things too free.
Yep.
Because it sets up a comparison with our pricing that could be negatively impactful on our ability to make money. But
yeah, and I think we covered that like maybe a month or so ago, or whenever they announced that some of the iLife stuff was going to be free on iOS.
Yeah.
And I definitely feel that way. It's like you can't compete with free. We don't have hardware that we sell with our apps, most of us. So that makes up the difference. We actually have to charge $5-$10 for an app at the very minimum. So that's a little frustrating. But for Mavericks, I feel like the OS is a different thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm happy that that one's free.
Yeah. And in fact, it's another situation. I think, as we said before, it's different when it's free versus merely cheap.
Right.
Because free is hard to compare with. You know, you don't really, people will compare, but it's a little trickier to compare free with the whole class of things that cost money. And yeah, like you said, this is great news for developers on the Mac in particular, with Mavericks being free. And they stressed this in the announcement, how much backwards compatibility they're striving for. And I didn't get a completely crystal clear idea of just how far back it goes, but they, you know, they mentioned that some of the systems that it supports are as old as 2007, I think, which is kind of nuts. Like an iMac from 2007, I think. And if you happen to have one of these 2007 iMacs and you've been like either too lazy or too cheap or too skeptical to update to 10.7 and then to 10.8 as well, Apple is still going to offer you the update to 10.9 for free. So
yeah,
as far as, you know, we as developers for the Mac are always looking at, well, what are the odds that people are going to actually update to this and we're going to actually have like a market? It seems pretty good. 10.9 being available as a free update to essentially the entire class of Mac users who we should be reasonably targeting in this day and age. That's a pretty good argument for maybe even going 10.9 only with some of our next updates.
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember now. So a few months back, I installed the Mavericks beta and I updated ClipStart, my video app, to support it. I haven't shipped that update yet and I need to now that Mavericks is out. But I can't even remember now. I did that work and then I sort of put it on hold because Mavericks wasn't out yet. And I can't even remember if I was going to require 10.9 or not. I'll have to go back and see what my info BLIS says about that. But I could definitely see doing that, if not now, soon. I'm hoping that on the Mac we'll start to see more of the sort of balance that we see on iOS, where so many people update. You know, Tim Cook said today 64% on iOS 7 already. So makes it a lot easier to require those.
Absolutely. And I've been developing, for example, the sort of the next round of all my apps with an eye toward 10.8 and higher. But I'm going to have to rethink that, because anybody who is running a machine that, you know, on 10.8 now, who would have been one of my customers who I would have been targeting, it seems like just a no-brainer that they would update to 10.9.
Yeah,
I don't see a lot of options for people to be like, you know, in the past there were these like cutting these lines in the sand that were more difficult for people to cross. Like, oh, if you update, you will no longer be able to run PowerPC apps, or if you update, you will no longer be able to run Classic. Remember, those were the days. But I don't know that there's any real, you know, to use a word that Craig Federighi used to describe Mavericks itself, I don't know if there's really any big doozy of a penalty for updating to 10.9. Can you think of anything that's going to have people saying, oh no, I can't update to 10.9 because then I'd be giving up X?
I can't think of anything offhand. Definitely going from 10.8 to 10.9 should be one of those smooth, everything's a little better kind of upgrades. I can't imagine there being any big problems with that. Going back further from 10.7 or one of the older ones, I don't know, maybe there would be something, but nothing comes to mind at the moment. And Apple does seem real aggressive of pushing these updates too, with just the UI is even more in your face than on iOS. Like, now with the big upgrades, it'll probably still be, you'll go to the App Store and there'll be a big banner and you'll click in it and you'll download the installer. But like the minor updates, I always find it funny, you know, when it pops up, like there's an update, there's no cancel. It's like show details or restart and you've got it, right? I've always found that really interesting. Like you can't put off some of these updates. They're like, in fact, if I don't want to install like 10.8.4 or one of these, the only real way to get rid of that little nagging alert is to show details, look at the update, pretend you read it, and then quit the App Store app.
Which is what you do several times, right? Before you...
But anyway, so they're pushing these updates. They're making them easier. It seems like it's going to be a fairly smooth update for most people.
Well, and one of the things that was kind of a big... I mean, I don't think it was a huge surprise, but it was like a reality check, was that, you know, part of the announcement was that Mavericks is in fact available starting today. So that had a lot of people jumping to publish reviews and stuff like that. I just saw the Ars Technica review is out from our friend John Siracusa. So
We'll
have our reading lists filled with lots of insightful analysis of the 10.9 update and what it means for all of us.
He was able to go through and get the version of his review that had free, because I think he had that as a possibility. Yeah. Like he thought it might, you know, might be $20, might be $30.
He probably has a Perl script that's like takes like 10 different variables, 10 different parameters, and then like spits out the final version of the review. Like, will it require, you know, it's like /myreview.pl-free-updates 10.6+-free-64. No, you know. Right. Anyway.
Yeah, it'll be great to read that and everything else. Lots to catch up on, and I'm sure all the press folks are scrambling. And speaking of a lot, I mean, the whole event was long. I mean, it went a whole hour before they talked about the iPad, right?
Yeah.
An hour of Mac and software. Mostly Mac hardware, but a lot also software that they kind of touched on, both iOS and Mac versions of like iLife and iWork, but mostly Mac stuff for a solid hour.
Yeah, and I couldn't tell whether Mac opening the show was a position of honor or if Mac was like, you know, the race car demo of the whole thing.
I think it was a position of honor because that was actually the most interesting part of the first hour. Was, you know, like all the stuff we've talked about for the last, you know, few minutes, the fact that Mavericks is free. We didn't touch on the hardware, but I mean that stuff was the most interesting, I think, of everything. They actually kind of rushed through almost the iPad Air and the iPad Mini, because there weren't really any surprises there. The only thing you could say you might be surprised by is that the Retina iPad Mini is $399. And then they still sell the old one for $299. But again, I saw just yesterday, I saw someone, or maybe the day before, someone speculated that that might happen. So again, even that is not very shocking.
One thing that struck me about the whole thing was it seemed like there were a lot of rough edges in the presentation style. In there were little things like I just noticed, like I could hear like the breathing of some of the presenters seemed like more than usual. I sort of wondered like, is there some guy backstage with a gun or something, just like saying, "You got to get this thing done the way I say." And there was a sense of like unease, I thought, and then there were some things about the announcements. Let me just say, I'm very happy with the announcements. I think a lot of this stuff is exciting, and I will be tempted to buy like a new MacBook Pro, this little iPad Mini. It looks great. I'm really excited about the new iWork stuff. But I was sort of left feeling a little bit like uneasy about the way it was presented, about some of the product decisions, like the decision to keep these sort of like, for lack of a better word, like
old,
downgraded, old and busted iPads.
Like the iPad 2.
The iPad 2.
Still for sale, same price.
Oh my God. Or even worse, the iPad Mini with the same name as the new iPad Mini, but crappier and cheaper. And
that doesn't bother me as much as the iPad 2. The iPad 2 is annoying because, well, first of all, it's old and it's yet another non-Retina device. But the thing that bothers me about that is just that it's called the iPad 2. It feels the name just doesn't fit in the lineup.
It doesn't.
At all.
No, I've lost track of iPad numberings or namings. I don't know what like
the Air is the 5, I think.
Right, and everybody's been giving numbers to these iPads that Apple has refused to give distinguishing names to themselves, right? And now we have this like, oh, which iPad mini is it? Is it the old and busted one or is it the new hotness?
Yeah.
I kind of wished, and for the sake of like app developers, iPhone developers have a much sort of like easier, I think, like line in the sand that they could draw by just saying, for example, do they give them the ability to say, I'm only going to support 5C and 5S, or is it just based on OS?
I've never needed that, so I'm not clear on that. But I think the iPod line or iPhone line is simpler in the Retina mix, because if you require iOS 7, it's all Retina,
right,
every device.
Right.
And now with iPad, not only do we still have the iPad 2, we have the old iPad Mini as well, which was kind of, I guess that was a surprise. Maybe people weren't expecting that.
Yeah.
So it's a strange mix there. The only thing I can think of is that, I mean, Apple never tells us. They say we sold millions of iPads, but they don't tell us which ones, right? And the only thing I can think is that they still sell a bunch of these iPad 2s.
Yeah.
I don't know. People come in the store and they want an iPad for $399 and they want the big one because their eyes are bad or whatever. They don't want the small one. They want to watch movies. I don't know. They must sell a bunch of these still.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they wouldn't still have this two-year-old device, you know, on sale.
You know what? I don't think I have a problem with the cheaper devices being there as an option for people, you know, who really could care less about the updated model's advantages. I guess what happens for me is when I see this kind of like marketing, it first of all, I find it confusing. So I imagine it being especially confusing for everyday people who aren't like constantly steeped in Apple news.
Yeah.
But I also empathize and maybe over empathize with this imagined scenario where, you know, I think because of like maybe people I've known who shop this way, like there's some people for whom the $100 discount really goes so far that they will do themselves a disservice by choosing the cheaper option, even if they can afford the more expensive option. You know, like, why would I pay another $100? It's practically the same thing. And and then inadvertently, like, for instance, if somebody can comfortably spend $500 on a new iPad and they go out and they buy the iPad too, well, they've probably just cost themselves money in the long run because this iPad, this new iPad Air is going to age better. You know, it's going to be more of a value to them over the years than this, like whatever they say, this $100 they save is costing them more in modernity, I think, than it's saving them in dollars.
That's interesting because I agree with you, but if you look at kind of my spending habits, it wouldn't seem like I do because I almost always go for the cheap thing. like when a new phone comes out, I always buy the low end one that doesn't have enough storage, and it's only $100 difference. And yeah, I probably would be a lot happier if I could store more family videos and photos. But I go for the cheap one. And if you look at the iPads I own, the latest iPad, big iPad I have is actually still the iPad 2. It's actually still a pretty good iPad, but I don't use it anymore. I use the mini and I love the mini.
Yeah.
So if I were walking into an Apple store today, there's no way I would buy the iPad 2, but turns out it's still a pretty good iPad.
Well, I'm actually, of all the things that they announced, I'm actually tempted to buy almost all of it, but,
here's the thing. So like, let's go into that. Like, are you going to get a Mac Pro? Cause it seems like,
no, I'm not going to get a Mac Pro. Realistically,
when you say tempted, it's like with a Mac Pro, you either were going to get one, regardless of how much the price was going to be, and we all knew it was going to be $3,000 or $3,500, you know, whatever. I mean, it is $3,000, but you know, I was going to guess around that $3,000, $3,500. We knew it was going to be expensive. It seems like you either wanted it and you were going into the event and saying, "I'm going to buy it," or you weren't going to get it. There's not like this, I'm kind of tempted, I'm kind of on the fence.
Yeah, that's really the exception for me. Oh, when I say I kind of want to buy everything, well, I do kind of want to buy that Mac Pro because it would be nice, maybe in an ideal world, to have that super powerhouse computer in my office. But I'm one of those people who made the leap years ago to treating a MacBook Pro as my one and only main work computer. And yep. I have a hard time imagining going back from that. I mean, the MacBook Pros are just so good.
Yeah.
It makes it hard to justify a compromise either of using an iMac or using a Mac Pro for me.
Right.
From that perspective, like the MacBook Pros are the most appealing to me right now. But, you know, to Apple's credit, my 2010 MacBook Pro, it's kind of still doing the job for me. And it doesn't have Retina, and that's a big drag. And I'm like, every once in a while, I think like, oh my God, more and more, like as time goes on, like I'm just seeing the world through non-Retina lenses and everybody else is like seeing a much better, obviously not the world literally, but you know, the web and in computer software on the Mac. One of these days I'll get updated, and maybe now is the time, but it's a little Manton, I'm not like at one of those like riding high on Mars at lucre moments. So
yeah.
Which came first, the App Store sales chicken or the egg? to see if I can justify buying myself a fancy new computer in anticipation of fancy new 10.9 only software releases.
Well, you have one less app in the top paid list to compete against because Mavericks will now be in the free category.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
We were talking about like the other week with 1Password finally passed 10.8 as the number one paid app. Now we don't have to worry about that anymore. It can be, there can be a couple more or one more third party app in that list, hopefully.
So would it be fair to say that Apple has given up or has sacrificed sales for its most profitable software product?
I guess so. I mean, because I don't know if it was number one top grossing or just top paid, but it was definitely always in the top paid number one. So I guess, yeah, I mean, it's probably some significant cash they're giving up.
It's an interesting decision. And I think, like I said earlier, it's good for developers. It makes sense to me. It's good for customers. It's good for Apple in the sense that it helps give more of their customers the best possible impression of Apple's software and hardware that they possibly can. You know, it's kind of like for me and for you, Manton, as software developers, we shudder to think of people using like our last generation software. Like, you know, imagine like, you know, when I imagine somebody still using Mars Edit 2, I'm like, oh my God, please don't judge me by Mars Edit 2, right. You know? And to some extent, I'm sure Apple and its engineers feel the same way. It's like, don't judge us by 10.6, please. You know, can you give us a break? We've actually made a lot of improvements.
But with the iPad 2, they have no problem selling that thing, even though, you know, they don't want to sell software that's only a year too old. I mean, they don't want any users to still run it, but that iPad 2, they don't care. I guess they're still proud of it. I don't know.
The lack of shame over the iPad 2, it is still, like you said, it's still a great device. So,
yeah.
And maybe that's part of it, is that software is so malleable and can be updated and adapted. So you might as well have people on the latest and greatest if it's possible. All right. Well, we're very happy to have back as sponsors of the show this time around Microsoft Windows Azure Mobile Services. And this week they wanted us to talk about a new service they offered called Notification Hubs. Notification Hubs are a broadcast push notification service that allows you to broadcast millions of personalized push notifications with extremely low latency. You can think of it kind of like Urban Airship in that it's a standalone service that can be used with whatever backend your app happens to use, whether it's hosted in another cloud provider or in mobile services itself. Notification Hubs hugely enhance your options for broadcasting relevant push notifications to everyone instead of going with event-triggered push. So, Manton, it seems like this is a great option for people who want to be able to send notifications across the board, not just because some programmatic thing triggered a reason to send an event to Manton because, say, I made a turn-by-turn game move. But when you really just need to get a message out to a huge swath of your users at once, this particular service from Azure Mobile Services lets you do that, even if you're not using mobile services as the main backend for your app.
Right. So if you have a need to send push notifications to a bunch of people, especially if you're, you know, your iOS, you also have maybe a Windows or Android version, works across all of those. So you can have one place to sort of manage your push notifications. They also have a couple things like tags. You can kind of have sets of users. So you don't want to, maybe you only want to send out a notification to like new people that have signed up or people who have used a certain feature or haven't used a feature. There's some breakdown where you don't want to just bug everybody about something, but a specific set. You can tag users and then send notifications just to those people. They also have templates and stuff, so you can kind of localize messages and customize it. So a lot of features. And, you know, the thing I like, and I keep kind of going back to when I think about Microsoft Azure and mobile services, is they just totally get iOS developers or trying to make things that appeal specific to iOS developers. So there's a bunch of cloud platforms out there, and maybe they're great for parts of your app. But Microsoft seems to have gone further than anyone else of saying, this is going to be great for iOS users. So when you go to like their documentation or their videos, they have walkthroughs like, here's someone using Xcode, like here's how to configure, the notification hubs, for example, using, you know, from your Mac, you do an Xcode, here's how to configure iOS project. Here's how to walk through, you know, Apple's developer portal for any configuration you have to set up. So lots of good stuff for iOS developers.
Yeah, it feels very scrappy to me, their approach to kind of attracting iOS developers. And I think, you know, as Mac developers, iOS developers, we haven't had a lot of experience working with Microsoft as a developer, you know, from a developer service provider relationship. But I've always heard such great things about the way Microsoft treats developers. If this is a taste of it, it's like it's very kind of like casual and pragmatic about like what people want and need from the company. And like one of the things that strikes me about this is their willingness to sort of let people take things a la carte. Like this is the kind of service that you could imagine another cloud provider possibly saying, well, this is something you get if you sign up for all the other stuff that we provide. the scrappiness, I guess, to me, it feels like they're like, you know what? If you just need this, we'll just give you this. If you need full on like back end with everything powered on Azure mobile services, we'll give you that. And it's kind of like no judgment. If this is what you need, this is what you get.
Yep. Good point. Yeah.
And so thanks again, Windows Azure Mobile Services, and in particular, the Notification Hubs feature, for sponsoring the show this week.
All right. So, Daniel, we were at Singleton. We saw each other. We said hi. We actually hung out and talked for a bit. And unfortunately, I was only there, I think when it was all said and done, I was in Montreal for 37 hours. My flight was really late Friday. I got there and I had to leave super early Sunday. So I missed the last couple of sessions. I'm kind of depending on you to tell me what I missed on Sunday morning and afternoon.
Manton Reese, rock star conference attendee. It's like I made a point of trying to talk to you more than I sometimes get the chance to, Manton. I think I got up to like 8 or 9 minutes of your time. And, when you put it into that perspective, though, there's a fairly big percentage of all of your time at the conference. So,
it didn't feel like it was weird. I don't think I've ever flown anywhere and stayed so little. It was really strange, but I did feel, I didn't feel rushed. I mean, I felt relaxed, and Saturday was great. I had a great time at the conference. I had a great time talking to people, but it just was a little too short.
Yeah. Well, one of the sad things about it, I thought I mentioned this to you after the conference was, I think this makes sense in retrospect, but we had to ask a bunch of listeners like, hey, if you see us at the conference, come up and say hi. And a bunch of people did. And thank you so much for doing that. It happened over the course of the whole conference. But then, Manton, this phenomenon occurred, which was on the very last day of the conference, like this sudden like surge of people coming up like, oh, hey, I just wanted to say hi. I just want to say hi. And I think what happened was, there's this like period of time where you're like, oh, this is the beginning of a long weekend. And, mm-hmm. there's going to be all kinds of opportunities to organically run into somebody and get a chance to introduce yourself. And some of those people, some of our beloved listeners, were waiting for that organic opportunity to occur. And only when it did not occur by Sunday, they said, oh, better go say hi to Daniel and Manton. And, well, you should have seen some of the looks of dejection on these people's faces when they realized that you were already gone.
Oh, you're making that up, but that does suck.
No. I'm not making it up. One guy was just super, super like nice and comes up and it's an honor to talk to you and meet you. And I'm like, oh, thank you so much. And he's like, I just wanted to make sure I got a chance to meet you. And where's Manton? Is Manton still here?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's I feel terrible about that because it really, it's a small conference and you feel like you'll just kind of naturally run into people, including a bunch of random people you haven't met, which I did, but still,
It's just large enough. It's just large enough that you, these past few years going to Singleton, I feel like I should have gotten a chance to talk to everybody, but it's just large enough that there are even some people there that not only did I not talk to them, but I never met. There are people who remain mysterious and enigmatic to me.
Yeah.
Even though we went to the same, 150 person conference.
Yeah. Too short. Next, I'm going to have to stay longer. I mean, last year I arrived, a couple days early. My wife came up and we did, explore the city and, we're there a long time and that was really great. And I think I'm going to have to extend the trip a little bit more next year. But I still had a great time. I mean, the conference was really great. And I'm sorry for the folks I missed, but it was great to chat with everybody else. And hopefully I'll see everyone else next year. Because they're actually, I have, there's some people that have been to Singleton every year. And I only met them, last year or at the second Singleton. So it happens. Sometimes it takes a couple years to catch up with everybody.
Well, it was a really good, I've always enjoyed Singleton. It's the third year of the show and it's my third year going. Yep. I think the same for you as well, right?
Right.
And I've always enjoyed it, but I think it's still ascending. I think this was the best year yet and mm-hmm. It's sort of growing into its personality maybe to some extent. The organizers have become more confident, I think. The first year, I seem to recall them kind of being like, they did a great job. even from the start, even the first year, but I seem to recall them being a little bit more like, you know, we apologize for you allowing us to put on a conference for you. We're not very good. And it was great. But I just remember like a lot of like proactive self-deprecation. And it seems like there's still a little bit of healthy self-deprecation, but they are they're pretty confident about the fact that they seem to accept now that they're doing something that people like. And hopefully that will inspire them to keep doing it.
Yeah. And they do a great job. And I think it helps that it was in the same venue again this year. There's a lot, hopefully less scrambling behind the scenes and just more things that, you know, there's a bunch of stuff that worked last year. We're not going to mess with any of that. Yeah. It's going to get good speakers, you know, get folks together and it'll just kind of work out. And I think with a small conference, everyone's on the same page. We're all peers. You know, it would take a lot to just totally mess it up. I don't want to jinx it, but I'm just saying, you know, you get folks together and they had the venue set up. They had the speakers, the lineup, everything, you know, and, you know, the conference just rolls and they did a great job.
Well, a lot is owed to the organizers, but a lot is owed to these speakers who, I mean, geez, it's like, I'm glad I didn't speak of this. I mean, I'm glad that, you know, I felt a little bit outdone the first year when I spoke. And it seems like the conference being still ascending is that the speakers seem to understand that there's a level of quality that is expected that I am frankly continue to be amazed that so many, you know, that basically all of the speakers are outdoing the previous year's speakers. For example, Manton, if I were asked to speak at Singleton again, I don't know that I would accept because
really
the pressure. I'm not discouraging anybody who is asked to speak at Singleton from speaking, but anybody who was there, and this is some serious stuff that's going down.
Yeah. I mean, very like high quality talks,
high quality slides, and like a level of honesty and earnestness.
Yeah.
Combined with humor and, you know, sort of like self reflection that it's the kind of thing where there were more talks there in one show that I would have counted as like the highlight of some shows.
Right. You know? And they're definitely, I mean, so Singleton has, every year they kind of have a theme and I feel like it gets stronger. I don't know if this is on purpose, if the organizers are just getting better and better at putting people together, but I feel like every year it's gotten kind of stronger as an actual theme. Like the first year is like, okay, there's a theme, we kind of get it, but it's kind of loose. And then second year, a little more. And then this year, they're just, you know, there was... I don't know, strong message, like you said, more personal, a lot of the talks. Just every talk, you know, again, I miss Sunday, but every talk, you know, from the opening on Friday to Saturday had some kind of personal story.
Yeah.
It was engaging, you know, gets you into it.
Well, I actually talked to Guy about this a little bit, and, you know, he was sort of squeezing me to like criticize it if I had any criticism. And the thing I came up with was a very weak criticism, but basically that, you know, owing somewhat to the sort of loosely themed nature of the show, there's been kind of like the theme more than any stated theme, I think, has been like personal stories or life stories or, you know, narratives of personal experiences. And as far as problems go, that's a pretty good problem to have because, you know, personal narrative stories are interesting and relatable. But I do agree that this year's theme, you know, for folks who don't know, the theme was core values. And like the previous themes of growth and change, I believe, respectively, they're sort of still a little bit loose, so there's a lot of room to interpret it. But I think that core values in particular encouraged speakers to maybe go a little bit more for like the self-reflective, emotional, really some of this stuff was a little gut-wrenching, to be honest. Yeah. And it was gut-wrenching in a good way. but you know, it's in it. This is something they're getting out of speakers. I think that it's something that sets Singleton apart. So let's just leave it at that. let's wrap this show up. You know, I'm going to get back to work here. I'm preparing for my, speaking of Singleton, speaking of shows, I'm preparing for my talk this Friday at CocoConf in, the greater Boston area. So I hope I see some of you folks out there in Dedham, Massachusetts. And Manton, I will catch you up on all the goings on at that conference next week.
Yeah, just like you caught me up on Sundays at Singleton, you didn't tell me anything.
I didn't tell you anything. Hey, you're gonna skip a day of a conference. You're gonna have to work for it. Maybe by next week, I'll tell you what happened on Singleton Sunday.
All right. Well, good luck with your talk, and thanks everybody for listening to the show. And we'll talk to you next week.
Take care.